Accession number 98875, reel 9.
Jiff along, and they've been in this team pressure, and they gave us, I think, new underpants, clean underpants to put on, they threw them at us, and was it socks? I know they threw some things at us like that, and then we came back, but we was...
Did they change the water after each batch of 15 men?
Oh, I don't know what they did. We come out and left it, you see. I don't know whatever they did with
the water. Was the water clean enough when you got in?
Oh, yes, it was clean, warm water, oh, yes. And they threw lumps of blue mottled soap at us, you know. Oh, yes. Oh, we had a good bath, there was no doubt about it. Because we simply had to do the pass time on until he said get out, you know. Wash each other's backs from one thing and another. You can imagine the fun we had too, all them men. Some men were 50 odd, you know, and others were only 18, 17.
It's a lot of joking.
Oh, yes. Tremendous lot of joking. You get used to all that sort of thing.
You weren't shy at all by then?
Oh, no, you're not shy after you've had a while like that with fellas. Not at all shy. Of course, we had a worse experience than that. But that comes a lot later on, you know.
Right.
In the story.
So, now, we were looking at the time at Armentières on rest, and then that rest ended after about 2 weeks.
And we marched.
This
then.
Would be about April, would it? 15.
Yes, yes. It would be around about April. And we marched up to the Aisne. That's just one side of Ypres. And we went in the trenches again there at St. Julien. Place called St. Julien.
What was the approach like to St. Julien?
Oh, the communication trenches. Oh, there was communication trenches all the way up, you know.
How did you get across the canal?
Well, wherever there was a bridge, they made a bridge, you know, and you skim across it like lightning to the other side. That's all they could do, because the horses used to be coming with guns, flying out, galloping over them, you know, and the men shouting, yeah! And the gun was bouncing across the bridge. Oh, yes, they were lively dudes, those bridges, because Jerry always had them marked, you see, bridges. And he used to send a salvo at once. Four shells at once. You know, practically straight away after one another. But when you got over the bridge, there'd be trenches at that side that you flopped in straight away, you see? So that he wouldn't get you with his shells.
Now, these communication trenches, they'd be fairly new to you. You hadn't had many of them at La Bise, had
no,
you?
We hadn't had many up to then. But, it wasn't anything strange to us. I mean, these trenches, they were dug and they went along, you know, connecting this and connecting that trench, you know, reserve trench, and then it would run on to another trench and so forth. They had to have these communication trenches, you know. So we went up and got planted in the trench at St. Julien, and that was where we come to the gas now.
Before we go on to the gas, how did the trench differ at all from the trenches at La Bise?
No, it weren't much different. No.
Was there any sign of more fighting, because each was a hotter section?
Oh yes.
What did it look like, the terrain at that time?
It weren't too bad then, you know. It weren't too bad, the terrain, because there hadn't have been all that shelling. But it wasn't too bad, and the front was fairly quiet, too, for a while. But when it came over, it was hand heavy, you know what I mean. He'd give you a good do and then shut up.
Now, these trenches...
Now, fellas would whiz them back and shut up the same.
These trenches at St. Julian, they'd be the reserve, the support trenches, wouldn't they?
No, they were front line trenches.
Front line? You were right in the front?
Yes. I wasn't in the front line trench. I was in a reserve trench with my platoon, with my lads. That was 30 or 40 yards behind that front line. There was that front line, and the front line was on top of a ridge.
Do you know which ridge it was?
No, it had no special name.
But it was by St. Julian.
It had no special name that I know of. And I was 30 yards back in another trench, you know, the same way, facing the same way as the front line. But they were 30 yards in front of us. And we couldn't see over the top of them. We didn't know if Germans were coming. We couldn't see because they were on top of the ridge. But they had Jerry spotted, you know.
They'd arrived during the Second Battle of Ypres, as it was called, hadn't you? Because the Germans had already made a gas attack.
They had made one somewhere.
And you'd been issued with...
Somebody had had gas.
What had you been issued? Had you been issued with any protective devices?
Oh, well, when we marched there, it was a damn hell of a march, I remember, from Armentières, the camp. It was about 20 miles. And when we settled down in a field, while the cooks supplied us with some tea, you know, and that, we settled down. This is a mile or two behind the front line, of course. Jerry's yelling all the time. And it's rather a rough house, you know. Anyway, while this is going on, nobody's taking a damn notice. They tell us that we may be gassed when we go in the trenches. So therefore, NCOs would be issued with so much flannelette, red flannelette, a yard or two, and so much elastic. And we had to make, fold it about three or four times, flannelette, touch the elastic and put it around our heads, and over our mouth and nose, if the gas came. So, of course, I got an issue, 5 or 6 yards, I have to make, what's the name? It's in the bottom of my haversack.
Did you make them up?
Never bothered. He'll not send any gas, the lad said. He'll not gas.
So you didn't actually make them?
They never bothered, and I never bothered. It's in the bottom of my pack, the elastic and the flannel.
Just in one lump still?
Yes, one piece still. We never cut it open or nothing, assured it, which I should have done between the men, really, you know. But they never bothered about it.
Were you given any chemical or anything, or were you told what to do? Put any solution or liquid on it? What would?
No. Get water on it. That's all.
That's all you were told to do.
Dip it in water anywhere, like where you could.
You hadn't heard much about the gas then, gas attacks.
This was only the second occasion in which he sent it. This was the 2nd of May. This day happened. This yesterday. The 2nd of May, Sunday, afternoon, tea time.
Well, tell me about what happened then. You were in your trench.
Yes.
And what was the first you knew of it?
Well, we were in our trench, and of course, in a reserve trench, you're not as much on the quiver as the front line. You see what I mean? Because you don't need to be. Them fellas is looking after Jerry in front of you. You see? They're watching him. And, across from St. Julian, looking right across, probably a mile or so, we could see another front, you know. There was the valley-like, and then it went up on the hillside, and we saw the Gurkhas going across. And, we saw this smoke coming out of German trenches, and somebody said, "Look! Bloody smoke coming out of them trenches. Look at your Gurkhas attacking." And they flew back again, the Gurkhas. So somebody said, "It's gas." No sooner had he said that than somebody shouts, "It's coming over here too." You know, "It's coming over here." Well, we're not being on the rise, we didn't know, you see. It was the front trench lads that shouted, "Gas!" And they ran away. They were jumping over the top of their heads, these lads out of front trench. You know, they were running, hopping it, out of gas, and jumping across our trench altogether, over our heads, and running away towards Ypres.
Did that happen immediately, the gas was spotted?
Yes. Yes, it must have done, the way they come. Of course, it doesn't take it long to come across with the wind, you know. Come floating across. And, well, everybody was grabbing their handkerchiefs, you know, coughing and spitting by then. And one or two attempt to get up the back of the trench, and the officer was there, "Get back, you know, with his revolver. Get back, you. Stand to."
Did you try and do anything with your flannelette and elastic bands?
Never troubled about it. It's still there to this day, for all I know. At the bottom of my big pack on my back. Bottom of that. And it was never touched or used. And, well, no sooner has he stopped a fella getting out of the trench there, the while he was doing that, a fella was nipping out of here on the back, running away. And
what did the gas?
I hadn't run away up to then.
What did the gas look like when it first came over?
Oh, it looked like a brownish green stuff coming.
How thick was it?
Oh, it wasn't too thick. No, I wouldn't say it was too thick. Like it wasn't exactly, you know, like a fog. But it was there, and it was thin, you know, but it weren't a fog. You could see through it.
What was your first impression when you first...
Well, my first impression was that we'd had it. We all thought we'd had it. If we got breathing it, we thought, well, we've had it. Bloody poison, now we are.
You thought it was instant, or...?
Yes, we didn't know no different. We thought it might kill you a few minutes after. He didn't know any different, you see. Anyway, we had to breathe it was there, and it had to go in our lungs. So anyway...
Did you start to panic?
Yes. And a shout come, "Retire!" But I think it was a bloody soldier who shouted it. It was nobody in authority, you know.
How long had that taken before after the first...
Only a few minutes. Only minutes.
How did it feel when you breathed it in before this man shouted retire?
It was nasty stuff to breathe. Oh yes, you knew you were taking it in your mouth. And you could talk though, yeah, you know, you weren't so bad. Right? You could talk, and I think some man has shouted retire.
Did it make you cough?
Oh, cough and spit. And anyway... The officer must have thought it was official too, you know, he didn't bother no further. And I never saw what happened to him after that. I jumped up out of the back of the trench, and I upped it, same as everybody else.
So the whole of the battalion, or the whole of the company, perhaps is best.
Yes.
Did you
and
see...
And he was shelling a machine gun in, you know. He was... shelling a machine gun in us, you know, to run away, scattering the place with machine gun bullets, and shelling like hell, shrapnel.
Had they actually made an attack yet, the German infantry?
Not that I know of.
You never saw any of them?
No. But like I say, it was over the ridge, you see, and I never saw over that ridge, because Jackie Lynn was on that ridge there, in front of us. Jackie Lynn was there. With his machine gun. But I knew he was there, but I never saw him. You know, he stopped there, you see. We upped it, everybody upped it and left him. And,
what happened to him? Well, he's a BC, isn't he?
He died 2 days after, though, because he was absolutely snuffled with the gas. He was killed, you know, stopping there all that time. Oh, yes, he killed him. He died 2 days after.
What did he do? Did he manage to... He beat off the attack, didn't he? Did you hear what he'd done?
Oh, yes. But whether he actually had, I don't know properly. Whether he actually had, because I never bothered. Neither did the lads. We were away towards Papirindia's with these bullets flying about us and shrapnel shells coming down on us. You never knew when you were going to get it. A piece of...
You say you were lightly wounded. Where were you hit?
Back of the neck. A piece of, a little bit of shrapnel came down. Hit me on the back of the neck. And there was two with me. Two men hung on to me sort of thing. There was three together running away, you know. Of course we're passing all sorts. We're passing. We got into Ypres. And French men were dashing out, giving us salt and water, but we couldn't swallow it. It was no use. It made no difference. It wouldn't go down our necks. We couldn't drink it.
Were you in a panic? I mean...
Well, we were frightened of the gas, of course. We thought we'd got gas. We never knew when we were going to get rid of it. Because we kept spitting it out and it was coming up our throats. The yellow stuff, you know. Yellow-green it was. And... But we could talk and we could run. And
so you weren't having that much trouble breathing if you could run?
No, not a great deal. No, no.
Did it hurt when you breathed?
No, no, it didn't.
So it was mainly this bile-like...
That's it. It was this stuff keep coming up our throats. You know, it come up from the stomach.
Were there a lot of casualties as you ran back? I mean, were people actually getting hit?
Oh, yes, there's some got hit who I took no notice. They fell and stopped where they fell as far as we were concerned. Me and these other two kept going to get away from this gas as far as we could. We met some Warwick men, and I'm sure, Warwick soldiers, I'm sure they went up to take over our position. They were sending them up to take over our position that we'd left. I'm sure they were, and I'm almost sure it was them that found Jackie Lynn. You see, still there with his gun. Of course, the gas had given over, coming over, I fancy, then. And anyway, we kept running and...
So it wasn't the Germans attacking, it was the gas?
Yes, it was the gas that did us. We opted, we didn't know whether they were attacking or not, we weren't even bothered. All we knew, he was doing quite a lot of shooting at us. And if he was coming after us, we didn't know and we didn't care, you see what I mean? If he was coming after us, he couldn't come for his own gas, you see what I mean?
Did anyone try and stop you once you got away from the immediate area of the gas? I mean, did officers and...
Yes, there was enough. When we got into Ypres, there was an officer there running about the road. Stand there, man that shell, all you. You get in there, you know. Until a shell blew into pieces while we were there. A shell come and blew him to pieces, so that was the end of him. He stopped no more. And we carried on.
So you pulled back, you went back 2 or 3 miles if you went back right into...
I went right through you. We went right through you, pretty much. Me and these two.
You didn't run all the way, I presume?
Walked and ran and stopped trying to get a bit of breath, I suppose, for a minute, you know, and then off again. We threw our equipment away. Our rifles even threw the damn lot away, and we were on the road between Ypres and Poperinge.
In Ypres, I think you saw a spy or something.
Ah, that's right.
Can you tell me about that? Because that's...
Oh yes, while we were coming through Ypres, an engineer dashed out of house, you know, with a fella, and shot him.
In front of you?
Yes, stone dead. Oh, we were just right close, passing by. He says, that bugger will telephone no more, you know. And he said, he's got a telephone down here, telephone to Jerry. We didn't bother much about him, or it. We simply kept going.
Was he in civilian clothes?
Hmm?
Who was it who'd been shot? Was he in
uniform? Civilian, yes. Civilian. Yeah. Wasn't a soldier or anything, he was a civilian.
Was he resisting?
been down a cellar signalling. That was, you know, what you'd see.
Was he resisting?
What?
Was he putting up any opposition, or what was he doing?
All this engineer dragged him out. He was, come on, you know. He had him by his collar, come on out here. Well, didn't shoot him till he got him in the daylight, outside. No, didn't shoot him till he got him there. Then he just shot him twice.
What, with a revolver?
Yeah. Threw him down. He said to us, he's been telephoning to the jellies. He's got a telephone down there. Oh, I, you know, off we went. We were no further interested in him. And
could you think people could see that you'd been gassed?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They could see by our eyes and our face that we'd got gas.
How? What?
Well, your eyes were watering and you... nose probably running a bit, you know. And it was oozing either side of your mouth, it was oozing out. Froth was still hanging all about your mouth, you know. Greenish froth. And there was a ditch alongside this Popperings Road.
Did anyone try and help him between St. Julian and Ypres?
No. Only the French, like I tell you. They brought salt and water. But it wouldn't go down their necks. They couldn't drink it, they couldn't get it down, so we had to bugger off a bit first.
That was to try and make you sick, was it? Salt,
yeah, that was the idea. But it wouldn't go down to make us sick.
Why wouldn't it go down?
It would have been a good thing if it had, probably.
What was stopping it go down?
The froth coming up, you know. The froth oozing up. And there was a ditch at that side of the road. And we were buggered, you know. Absolutely.
This is on the road to
Poppery. So we got down on that slope. Oh, panting and gasping, you know, for breath. And an officer came along on his horseback and saw us. And he stopped his horse and he said, what's wrong with you men? You know. And he looked at us, of course.
How many were there by then?
Two and me, three of us. So he looked at us and we said, we've been gassed, sir. Yes, he says. He turned round to his batman that was riding with him, you know, on another horse. Go back and bring an ambulance, quick. So he did. The batman turned about and off to Popperinge for an ambulance. And it was no time, the ambulance was there too, and we were in it. And dropped off again in a yard at Popperinge.
What were those ambulances like?
Oh, they were rough stuff, you know, many a time. They were a bit, you know, not...
No suspension?
No, poor suspension. But you never bothered if you was flying out of the line or something like that. For instance, the time I was wounded...
Ah, sorry, I've led you on there.
Shot in the leg. He bounced us up through the roof almost. We shouted, you know, makes no difference. They'll not go slower.
What had happened to the rest of the company and the battalion? You've got down to just three of you now. Where are the rest gone?
Oh, I'm not bothered where they are, and I don't know. They're scattered. Like us, they must be somewhere round about. I'm not interested. And when I get to Popperinge, they just look at us there and they don't know whatever to do with us. Anyway, they tried to give us some tea, and it wasn't much good. And we lay there in the open yard on stretchers, you know. So they banged them off to hospital. So they took us off to hospital.
They didn't treat you at all then?
No. And as a matter of fact, when they took us off to hospital, I thought we were getting better. I thought I was getting better.
Why? What?
I'd gone easier. And nicer. I wasn't as bad foaming.
The froth had gone then?
Not quite as much. I thought it was going better, I could tell. I wasn't frothing at the mouth much or anything. And I thought, now I'm all right. They get to this doctor somewhere at Baylor or somewhere, the first doctor we went to. And I thought, oh, it's back up the line, you know. Anyway, I find out I'm going further down the line. to Rouen instead of going back up the line. He's sending me to Boulogne, to Rouen.
Could you understand why? Did he tell you?
No, just labelled me up for Rouen. And I got on the train, you know, and arrived at Rouen. These other two weren't with me then. I don't know where they were. Don't know what he'd done with them. The doctor, you know, this first doctor. Because we were treated all separately. And what he said to them, I don't know. But I was on my own. And I was in this hospital at Rouen. And didn't know what to do there. And I'm almost sure one day it was Professor Aldane that came. I'm sure it was him. He came through the hospital and he stood chatting at the foot of my bed to the doctors, you know. And I heard him say distinctly something about the men over 50 didn't have much of a chance to get better, something like that, you know. But the men under 50 should be okay. Well, I was only 20, so I was okay. But I'm certain I heard him telling him that. Yes, I told fellas after that I heard him.
Had he developed any chest pains or any other symptoms by then?
No. No, but they simply said they didn't give us anything to eat. We just had to have a drink of milk when we could. On a big spitting cup they gave us. That's all. Nothing no more. Because I think this Aldane said starvation was the only thing for us. You know, I'm sure he did. Must have done. Because that's what they did, they starved us. I couldn't lift my teacup like this before I'd done in that hospital. And I had said, I told you, I felt fine thinking I was going back up the line, didn't I? Before I went in. And I couldn't lift my teacup like this. No. Trembling. And
was that the gas or the starvation though?
Starvation, that was, I'm certain, because I was fine when I went in, like I say.
And so you think the treatment was what made you ill?
Yeah, starvation was the cure, and the starvation did cure me. You see what I mean? The starvation did cure me.
But I thought you were already getting better, you see.
Yes, I was, but I'm sure the starvation cured me. Because that's all I was doing. I was getting nothing to eat, whatever, and they weren't bothered about giving us anything to eat. Like I say, only when I've been there, how long? About a fortnight. About a fortnight on milk. And nothing else but milk and a spitting cup. So it must have been starvation. And they said, you think I could eat a bit of bread and butter? And I tried. And a thin bit of bread and butter, as thin as it could possibly cut. And I ate that. I got it down. It did go down, you see, I got it down. And then day after, the doctor said, oh, you're doing fine. He said, would you like some more bread and butter today? I said, yes, sir. So they fetched me a bigger piece, you see. And I ate that. He said, now, I want you to eat this because you're going on a journey tomorrow morning. I said, where to? He says, do you think you're fit? I said, where is it to, sir? To Blighty. Oh, yes, he says. I said, I can walk it, sir. I can walk it. And I could have done. Anyway, two orderlies come the next morning, clean pyjamas on and everything, on the stretcher, off to the boat and across.
Had you been having any more symptoms that you think were caused by the gas during this period, as opposed to the starvation? I mean, what was the gas doing that made you feel ill?
It was simply, it was starvation, but I wasn't hungry. You see what I mean? I wasn't hungry for any food, you know, I'd have been asking for some. I didn't want any food, and still I was having none, only this milk, so it showed. And And like I say, I was sweating in this bed, you know, and I couldn't lift my arm like this hardly, you know.
Had the bile stopped altogether by then?
Yes, practically stopped coming up, oozing up or anything.
When did that stop?
Oh, a day or two before then, I should think.
So
before I got my bread and butter.
So when that stopped, a couple of days later, you got offered bread and butter.
That's the idea, you see. When they could see that stopped, that's when they offered me the bread and butter to see if it would go down my throat, it did.
Did the bile taste horrible or what?
Oh, it wasn't gore. It was simply eating something. I didn't know whether bread and butter.
No, sorry. Did the bile taste horrible? You know, the green stuff.
Oh yes, that was nasty. Oh yes, you very soon spit it out, you know, and it come up. Oh yes, but you knew it was poison, and you never nothing but your old bile or anything else. It tasted like all you knew it was poison in your inside.
Did they tell you what gas had caused it? I mean, did you ever find out?
Yes, it was chlorine. Chlorine it was.
Now, you heard you were about to go to a thing and they picked you up and gave you new pyjamas. What happened then?
Wheeled me off on the train, on the boat at Rouen and across to Southampton. When I got to Southampton...
What was the crossing like?
Oh, all right, no trouble. I mean, you see, when they took me down below when they first took me on board. And... because, like I say, I was weak and all that, you know, terribly. And they took me down below the boat, down the bottom somewhere. And I went...